Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft.
Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. English 115F, Fall 2007, Vanderbilt University. Professor Jay Clayton, Professor Matthew Jed Hall. Visit our class blog at worldsofwordcraft.wordpress.com.
Your paper, please.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Good. I like that. I would like you to do is to look at your own paper. We're not going to exchange papers today. I want you to look at your own paper and identify for yourself your thesis and the couple of sentences, two or three sentences that would best show the rest of the class your thesis, and the best passage of evidence in support of your argument somewhere in the paper. And then we're going to pick at random one of you all to plug in and put those two passages up on that board. Is there a way for them to send their paper?
If they're on Google Docs, they can easily just go up to Google and pull it up there.
Or maybe so you can put digital Dropbox up there.
It'll work too.
Okay, so get started on that.
Because
that way we could actually...
Do you want us to copy and paste into like a separate, or do you want to?
Let's just have the just highlight in the paper. Oh, I see. I think it's better to put it up there because if they highlight it, we'll just let them. So, Jonathan and Tim, Will, hello. Get your paper out in Word. Find your thesis. Can you hear me? Find the passage that has your thesis and highlight your thesis, and then find a longer passage, the best section of your paper for supporting your argument, the best piece of evidence and surrounding text for supporting your argument.
Can it be like a specific point?
Yeah. What?
Can it be like a specific point in the paper?
Yes. That's what I want. You know, someplace in the body of the paper, find a passage.
The passage that asserts your thesis, and then the second one was the best paragraph?
The best bit of evidence and supporting argumentation, in support of your argument. Good. That's nice. So what's that little thing?
This is Microsoft OneNote.
Well, that's cool.
OneNote.
That's not cool.
And what does that do?
It's a notebook.
So what?
So is it a database program?
It's the analog. It'd be a paper notebook with dividers. You could take notes. Since this is a tablet PC, I can make handwritten notes. Flip the tablet around.
Oh, that's your tablet PC. I used it when I borrowed that tablet.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the
okay,
one note.
Okay, got it.
Is that too long?
No, that's great. I sort of want the interior passage to be a substantial passage so that we can go over it together.
Ooh.
That was a good stretch.
Sorry. I took the way I could say my thesis and my conclusion. Yes. I like that better. Am I getting my conclusion?
Is there a chair?
That's good. Tim, could you pull on around over and give the next one in there? Squinch in. Okay, everybody done? Who's not finished?
I'm still waiting for my piece of evidence.
Okay.
whether my best piece of evidence.
How long should our best piece of evidence be? Like, should be like a paragraph? Or a like
paragraph.
Just a few
no, a paragraph. I want a chunk that we can analyze.
That's a sentence, and that's your paragraph. Perfect.
Where are we putting it?
Just to highlight it.
Let's see here. Okay. Look at the magic cord.
Of embarrassment.
It's the magic cord of embarrassment.
My background.
Let's go down at this end.
Okay, be careful. Then you realize one of your homemates
stuck
in your room.
Well, just let's see here. Can we move this whole thing down?
If you hear something sizzle, you know you can't.
Okay. Well, it looks like it reaches all the way to Will. Plug in.
Jack in.
Jack in.
The blue pill or the red pill? Will, which one do you want to take?
Set your computer to receive a file.
I'm really hoping that
connection. You have that connection, Matt. So.
I had mine disabled for an extra $20.
Anyway,
yeah,
just kind of shove some gum in there.
Okay, are you all set, Will?
Yeah.
And you've highlighted your passage correctly? And,
I think so.
Okay, let's see if we get over to you. There's me.
That's not good.
Still uploading the game. Aha!
Whoa.
Okay, go to your thesis first. Everybody finished? Is everyone finished? Because I want us to be attending to Will. So,
oh, next title.
What is it?
Show your title, Will. That's
yeah, go
title.
To your title.
It's a play on the PlayStation.
It is. Now, are you going to take us to your thesis? Take us to your thesis. and before we read it, tell the class what you're going to be arguing in this paper. Just talk us through this paper, and then at the appropriate moment, read us your thesis statement.
Okay, well, I'm arguing that the players that play the game are just as much owners of everything within the game as the actual designers are. Because, basically, like, the game that... Without the players, the game that exists is just like a blank like template with nothing, no like real substance or like importance to it. And the players make it their own in a way. And I argue that the player owns their own narrative, and the designer only really creates the like mode for them to like create it.
Okay, you want to read us your thesis?
Sure. Therefore, every player should be recognized as a co-creator of the online world. They may not have added as much as the game designers did in terms of content, but every player adds their own something to an MMO.
Excellent. And now take us to your evidence, the piece of evidence you think...
I didn't really get to decide if this is the best, but this is a piece.
It's a good one. So you want to read the whole paragraph that's in?
Okay. When playing through MMORPGs, suggested paths are laid out as to how to progress within the game world. Quests and storylines are written and designed by the game makers. While the text and content that is concrete and unchangeable should be considered the property of the writers, the narrative itself and the way stories are lived out is the user's. When a player begins a quest within a progression game, they are almost always presented with a background story and a set of tasks they are supposed to complete. That template is the sole property of its creator. However, the act of performing the quest and living out the situations presented is determined by the user and therefore the user's property. Unlike a movie or a novel, the game gives the user freedom to go about reaching the end any way that they like. The journey taken in between the structural aspects of the game is determined by the user and their playing style. The stories and encounters that occur apart from or within the overall structure of the game are developed and owned by the players.
Okay. Thank you. Comments? Talk to him.
Yeah, that's good, man. No, really, I like it.
That's a good comment. It is useful. I'm serious. It is useful to know when you've written something good. That's a very useful thing. It's just as useful as knowing when you've written something bad, because you know what is working. It gives you something to aspire to. So now, beyond the compliment,
mine contradicts it. So
let's discuss. I want us to have a double discussion right here. I want us to argue with him or for him, and help him improve this passage. Or it may not need a word of improvement. But let's have that double discussion. So start us off, Wesley. You disagree with him.
Do you want me to disagree with him by reading my part?
No. Let's have a discussion.
Well, the way I see it is every action that you can possibly make in the game as part of quest progression, as he's described, has been predicted and programmed by its creators. I mean, every single way that you can go about it, whether you're a lore master using, you know, your spells, or if you're a champion using your sword, they've predicted it and they've programmed it, and it's still within the construct of their creation. And the entire progression, the linear path, has been mandated by its creators. And I don't see how you can say you've produced any original content whenever it's all a part of their original creation.
I see. Okay, so I think Seth was first, then
I'm just going to start shooting.
Michael, Chris, Matt.
That's what starts talking.
I don't know. Go, Seth, go.
Well, I was just saying, the story is exactly the same for everybody, but your experience within the game, your interaction with other people, and how you go about doing everything is unique, and that experience is what has value, not doing the quest itself. It's just your enjoyment of the game, so I think no one can take that ownership away from you.
No response.
Can I respond? You want me to go?
Save it up. Concentrate on, so that you're going to deliver a riposte to the entire collective wisdom of this class. You will hammer it down.
Taylor states in the thing we had to read, it's a quote from Farmer and Morningstar about when they were developers, the more people we involved in something, the less in control we were. Players will play how they want to play. Like, in every game, they'll find little secrets that they can do that developers never intended to be used, because when they spend years creating this, they expect players to play a certain way. The players don't always want to play that way.
Oh, it's true.
So you're getting there.
Yeah, if they just created, like, this persistent world and there were no players, then, like, it would not be alive. And each character the player creates is his own, and Taylor says about it, says, it takes a player to create a character, and it takes the time of the player to develop the character. Through her labor, she imbues it with status, qualities, accomplishments. So otherwise, it's just nothing.
Matt, you're next, I guess.
I just want to say, by the way he was kind of arguing, it sounds like, from what you said, everything's already chosen out for you, right?
No, I'm talking about within narrative within the game. Like, I'm separating narrative from personal interaction.
I just want to say, it just doesn't make sense to me, because you choose which quests to do, and you choose, even though there's a broad range of spectrum out there everywhere, it's kind of like life. You can choose to go to this college, but in the end, aren't we all going for, like, the same goals? Or we all have, there's an unlimited amount of goals, just like in games, that we're all striving for. So isn't it kind of the same thing?
Well, see, in games, I think it's finite. There's a certain number of choices, and there's a certain number of choices that you have in different paths you can take, and there's never an original path.
I'm really proud of you for sticking to your guns and debating on the intellectual level, but we need to get more people in here.
Sorry.
So, Peter.
I think, Wesley, that your definition of narrative is a little, I don't know, more constricted than mine is, because I want to give you an example of a narrative that I experienced over fall break. Melikotones, protector of the Shire, and Master Cheerable, head of the Vicarious Universe Kinship, joined together at the Lonely Inn.
Forsaken Inn.
From there, they ran cross-country through orcs and goblins up to the top of Weathertop, where they collected mountain basil. Then they turned and admired the sunset from the top of Weathertop, at which point they discussed taters and other hobbity things. Then they had a good laugh, and they ran back down the mountain, slaughtered a bunch more orcs, talked to a ranger, and then parted ways. I don't think when they programmed shooting orcs with bows that they expected me to say, I'm glad that there's a hobbit who always carries taters around with
him. How about
him
taters?
Tim.
I am kind of in the same boat as Wes here, arguing against all of you. I think that, yes, it's true that every player of a game owns a certain piece of it, and like the story is different for everyone. But I think at the same time you have to realize that, yes, without like taking an individual player, without them the game still exists, but without the creator, the game designer, there would be absolutely nothing to play. So they create the, like, it's hard to say, I guess, the basis for everyone else to create their own story, but without their creation there would be nothing for everyone else. So I think in that sense it's still like ownership of the game is the designers primarily and filters down.
Mike, did you have your hand up at one point?
No.
Okay. Chris.
I don't think you can really claim that, because basically what you're saying is that the people who make the hammers and the nails are responsible for construction of every single house out there, and that they should have complete ownership of each and every house just because they made the tools to design the house. I don't know if you can really claim
or
that.
Or even an architect.
Yeah.
Greg, and then I'll let you get a chance back in.
I'd have to say that, like, the creation of the game seems to me to be more the house, and then like the people's interactions within the house is like what people are like. That's what they own.
Yeah, I also think it's kind of an adequate analogy, because like conversation and interaction between characters is like we talked about, we sort of talked about at lunch, is an arbitrary, you know, it's sort of a nuance. It changes like how you feel when you're doing the task, but it doesn't change the task that's done. All it changes is who it's done with and how fast it can be done, like if you have someone running you. But either way, you can't copyright a conversation. It's especially when it's not like recorded. It's not like it's part of the narrative. It's just a side note on what's being done.
Remember when we read the passage in Tolkien about the conversation in the Green Dragon Inn? You remember that? Then we went to the Green Dragon Inn and there was nobody having any conversations until we went inside it. There is a fundamental difference in status in the realm of dialogue between what is possible in a static text and what is possible in an interactive text. And I am not arguing against you. You may still be right, but I think your analysis has to take into account the fact that one medium allows a set of unprogrammed conversations to become part of the experience, and another medium does not. Think about that for a minute. Tim, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I'm going to be really quick. With the whole hammer and nail analogy, I would say that the hammer and the nail are the little pieces of technology that the game creators use to make the game, just like they use to make the house.
Programming.
Programming.
What happened to our screen here?
Oh, sorry.
Let's get us going here. Okay. So we didn't make any comments on this passage here. You all thought this passage was perfect? This was what is, who are we comparing this to? Is this Tolstoy? Is this
I was actually going to make a comment on his use of game, the word the two words game and makers.
Mm-hmm.
When it in the sense where it says quests and storylines are written and designed by the game makers,
mm-hmm.
I think that might be a little vague, because like when I was writing my paper, I wanted to say game makers, but the whole point of this essay was to decide who actually like makes the game what it is.
Interesting.
So
that's true. That is vague.
Yeah.
So I tried to stick along the lines of saying like the corporate producers or the game companies.
Well, make yourself a comment.
Yeah, I'm just going to do that.
But even saying game designers as well. I mean, that's less vague, but still, it's really tough to choose.
There's designers, producers, publishers, or the distribution mechanism.
Say it again.
Designers, producers, publishers.
Right. And I think that we can almost stipulate that when you say game designer, you were talking about somebody employed by Turbine. And then when you say some more encompassing term, you will need to define what you mean. So that when you go towards maker, if you mean more than the designer, publisher, producer, that's something that you ought analytically to define in your paper. Yes?
Without detracting too far from the discussion, if you flip over for me, Jay, I just want to show one thing. I'm going to get Chris to read it out for us.
That's me, I guess. There we go.
Let's see what Turbine thinks about our discussion.
Turbine reserves the right to deny, in its sole discretion, any user access to the Turbine sites or services without notice for any or no reason, including without limitation for violation of these terms of service.
So while you all are having this discussion at this level, each of you in this room, regardless of your position, has agreed to that term of service. That's all I have to say about that.
Meaning. Yes.
That's actually something I touched on a good amount in my paper.
Okay, well, we're going to go over to your paper in a minute. I'm liking this volunteer. Do you want to... Is that a passage you've got highlighted already?
No, actually.
Well, then go ahead and tell us about it.
Just tell you about the point I was about to make?
Yes.
The point I was going to make is that, in the end, yes, you can create your own parts of every game, but by signing this is a contract that everybody has to sign to play. You're agreeing that basically ownership is still Turbine's, and you know these kinds of laws and like contracts are in place and they're signed, in my opinion, because games wouldn't want to make the game if they didn't have game makers, which is too vague, but like the corporations who make games wouldn't want to make the games if they weren't able to get this contract signed, because they would run either they'd have lawsuits for kicking people off, and the people saying, why'd you kick me off? I want my subscription back. So on and so forth. It's like, I think these contracts are the reason these games even exist.
They've got
it. Anyway, so it came out a little jumbled.
I'm going to call on Peter and Chris because they're really being great to volunteer, but we got a big swath. I can't point at you. But a big swath of people that I haven't gotten into this discussion yet. So be thinking about all the things you're going to say. Yes, Peter and Chris. Peter first.
I was just going to say that my paper, actually, I had like half of it discussing Sony and Turbine and SOE, I guess. Mm-hmm. That was
right, Sony.
Yeah. What?
SOE is Sony.
Okay, well.
Sony Online Entertainment.
Probably have to edit that in a little bit. But anyways, I discussed how they control the game. They own the game, I said. They can do this. They can cut you off. You have no access to it because they own it legally and economically. If something bad happens on it, like if somehow illegal activity went through it, their head would probably be on the civil suit chopping block. But they do not own the narrative, because I discuss how the narrative is something bigger than playing the game. The narrative is sort of Middle Earth is the narrative. Even the Lord of the Rings trilogy books, it sort of seems like they're more of a history than a storyline sometimes. Because I think he's trying to create the world, and rather this is just sort of one story that happens in Middle Earth. So we're experiencing Middle Earth through Turbine's Lord of the Rings Online. You can also experience Middle Earth through your fan fiction. You can experience Middle Earth through his original stories. You can experience it through Peter Jackson's films. You can experience the narrative however you want to. And so even if Turbine says, no, you can't play our game, you can say, well, fine, you can't stop me from interfacing with Middle Earth.
In reference to the we can term nature at any time whatsoever, blah, 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 I think that's more of like an extreme measure that would pretty much never be used, because if they use it too often, people would just get fed up and be too worried about having their whole account and all their hours put in just washed down the drain. So, in reality, the subscribers kind of own the developers, because without their money to produce the game, then they wouldn't be able to produce the game. I don't know. It's kind of like a back and forth thing.
I think the games is like in LOTRO, it's based off this book series. Well, LOTRO tries to take the position that they own everything in the game, that everything's original. Well, nothing's original since Fire. That's what Taylor said. I thought that was kind of funny. But I think, like, just like that, our experiences shouldn't be owned by the game company. I think it's kind of hypocritical for them to do that. And I think they should be responsible. Like, they shouldn't have stuff like the turbine owns you kind of thing. I don't think they should have clauses like that. Or they should be responsible. Like, they should give excuses why you got banned. I mean, obviously, if it's something illegal and, like, and based on our law system, then it's fine. But it's,
you know, like, Taylor, what do you think of Taylor's point that he made that these game makers are putting language in their EULA that is absolutely unenforceable in a court of law? They can say this, but, you know, it's, what's the legal term? I wish my wife were here. She'd just spit that legal term out right away.
Mumbo jumbo.
Exactly.
Hello.
It's a contract of adhesion, I think. Boy, this is going out over the internet.
So, luckily, it's not streaming.
So. Right. Don't quote me on that world. It's a contract that's unenforceable. That if you had the money to sue, there is a pretty decent chance that Turbine could not enforce all the conditions of its contract. But they put them in there simply because they know you won't fight back, that you can't fight back, that they're a corp. At least that is Taylor's point. What do you think of that point?
I was under the impression that we could. I thought that was a legal contract, like an explicit contract.
You can put anything into a contract that you want, but that contract is not always enforceable in a court of law. So they put that in there. You sign that. But if you took them to a court of law to say, and said, I don't think you had the right to make this. This contract is an unfair contract, and I had to sign it. There's a chance you could win. Well, that's Taylor's argument, at least. Yes, and then I'll come back to you,
the
Max.
The quote I think that he used, and I included it, says, these terms and conditions are usually written in vaguely defined or unspecified notions of vision or essence.
Yes.
Right. So they're more like guidelines, sort of a reference to the movie.
Right. I mean, vague and overly comprehensive conditions can be a grounds for a court to throw out a contract.
I think while the actual what the contract says itself is one way they sort of manipulate you with the contract. There's also the fact that for a lot of games, they're packaged and you buy them like that and spend money and time buying them, take them home, install them, and then read the contract. So if you were to do anything about it, costs have already been paid, either in money or time.
I think that could be a useful argument. Yes. Then answer.
Contract. Well, I had something. Promise.
See when it happens.
It'll come to you. Let's get Wesley, but you work on it.
I feel like we're getting sort of away from the central. I mean, what I think is the central argument here, since he talks about how. Do you want to stay on this track?
No,
go ahead. It's sort of off track. We're talking about most likely, but the very product of the game, and we're in our topic. We're assuming that this is right. The very product of the game is produced in conjunction with the players, but the very product of the game is a summation of your experience, the gaming experience. An experience is intangible. It's not ownable. It's not, you know, you can't record every experience on the game, and you can't brand and market an experience. You can, a narrative as defined as like a series of events, that's how you would have to define a narrative. It's a series of events. I mean, a conversation, yes, is an event, but the contents of that conversation are experience. So I'm saying that a narrative as a series of events as it exists in the game is only owned by the people who created that experience in that game.
There could not be two positions more diametrically opposed than yours and Pete's.
I think it hinges on, experience.
He's remembered his comment. Let's make sure we get it in here.
As far as it holding up in a court of law, I know Taylor touched on the fact that, I mean, would it be worth it? I mean, what types of, supposing that you did win in a court of law, which would be tough because your legal costs would be tremendous, and the corporations which back the games have so many more resources at their disposal, and, you know, hundreds of lawyers or whatever. But even if you were to win, hypothetically, what types of damages would they have to repay you? Or, I mean, would they have to reinstate your character, and would that be worth the time and money that you have to spend in the court of law?
Class action suit is the answer to that. It's not the injury to one person.
Right.
Actually, Daniel, could you read that out for me? This is about a real case, right to Jeff's point.
Virtual real estate entrepreneur Alan Grafe recently announced that her Second Life avatar, Anshi Chung, had become the first online personality with a net worth of more than $1 million. But Grafe may be living in a fantasy world. Linden Lab, the company that created Second Life, explicitly states that the Second Life residents do not own their accounts or any data on the Second Life servers. A lawsuit filed last May in Pennsylvania aims to clarify the legal status of virtual land. Second Life residents Mark Bragg is suing Linden Lab and Rosedale for breaching a virtual land auction contract, fraud, and violations of Pennsylvania trade practice and consumer protection laws. Whichever way the judge rules in Bragg's case, Linden Labs stands to lose.
Interesting.
Yes. This case has been resolved.
Oh, you want? Do you know? Can you tell us about it?
The state of Pennsylvania won against Linden Labs.
Well, no.
Wow.
I mean,
this is a 2006 article.
They're talking about virtual money, or like in terms of like.
Virtual accounts, virtual money.
No, it means $1 million worth of real money.
Money.
Okay.
Let's go back
in terms of, like, if you were to sell it on eBay or something.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. She would sell it.
Right? Yes.
Well, I knew a couple of cases happened about this in EverQuest, like, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a gray area that the courts generally seem to favor the gamers just because what the gamers argue is that what they're actually selling is time and not an actual...
Well, Taylor says that.
Right.
So that's
like, there's no actual object. Like, the virtual thing is meaningless. What matters is that they're selling their invested time, service.
So.
Well, I was going to respond to Wes's comment about just your character. Like, you don't own anything. The time you put into your character is what gives it worth. Like, time is intangible, but there's evidence of that time, which is your character, which is your reputation, which is your gear, which is the time you spend on it. And I think you should have rights to that ownership because that's your time. That's like our entire capitalist system is based upon money being worth time and stuff, not tangible objects.
But like, what rights do you want for that? Like, what do you want to own?
The company should be responsible for what they like. They should give explanations for when you're banned.
Actually, what you're asserting is a Marxist idea called surplus value. It's not a capitalist idea. Because Marx says your labor is what adds value. The capitalist system, say the servers, the network, the intellectual property that went into the creation of the world, is what constitutes value. It's not philosophy. It goes to who owns the narrative, because that's who owns that world and its foundation.
But
this is very productive, but...
I was just going to say that, like, okay, you own the rights to your character, and well, let's say, like, I know you built a city in the world, like, okay, I say you own that city, but, like, a company owns the company made the world. So, like, I think the problem is, like, okay, you can have rights to that city, but I think the companies have the rights to the world. They don't have the rights. I agree. Like, they don't have the rights to the narrative. But if they take away the world, nothing can, like, your city. What do you really own in that city? I mean, you don't really own anything. You have the.
I want to draw this discussion back to Will's paper.
Good point.
You all, which he just nicely let fade out. You all praised this passage, but I asked Will to find a piece of evidence. Is there any evidence in this passage? What is this? That's argumentation. And I think that's important for you to distinguish in your own mind and have a clear understanding of what part is argument
And in a sense, that is pure assertion. Read it to us again, and let us think about it as, not from the top, but just when a player, think about it this as Will asserting his opinion without any grounds for it. I mean, that's a really negative way to put it, but I want you to see the difference between argumentation and evidence. Go ahead.
Just the yellow part. When a player begins a quest within a progression game, they are almost always presented with a background story and a set of tasks they are supposed to complete.
Stop. You haven't presented any evidence. You've asserted that. Now, we happen to all know it's true, so it's not an assertion he's in trouble for. But he's just asserted that. Go.
That template is the sole property of its creator.
Why? What evidence for that? Go on.
It's your opinion.
I know.
Go on.
However, the act of performing the quest and living out the situation presented is determined by the user and therefore the user's property.
Not only is there no evidence for that, that's the very thing we've been fighting over.
It's obvious.
Okay, we won't go through this sentence by sentence. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't evidence elsewhere in the paper. And I'm also not saying that Will should stop and sentence by sentence add in evidence. There should be a kind of rhythm between argument and supporting the argument. So, you know, the very next paragraph may have evidence for that. So don't mistake me as thinking you have to just insert examples and evidence into between each sentence up here. But we need to understand that distinction as writers.
I have a question. If he were to use this as evidence, could it be by using a specific example of a specific MMO?
Yes.
But wouldn't that make it less powerful? Because, or could he, how do you think, which one do you think would be better? Saying this, which we all know is, we've all played a lot of different MMOs, and pretty much every single quest is storyline, task, or here's the bottom line, do it. Right. But he can't say every single one of them.
Right.
But every single one of them. So,
great question.
Is
how
this
do you
more strong, or do you think by making it evidence by turning it into in this game, in this game, in this game,
limits it maybe?
I think I'm going to have that. You know, general statement, and then back it up with maybe like example from a game or something like that. I don't know. I mean,
yep. Did you have a comment on that?
I was going to mention the same thing. Like how
okay.
we like.
So, what? So then you come to the next problem. I'm calling for evidence. Matt, you are saying, but what? How do you make your evidence generalizable? Rather, you know, teachers are always saying be specific, use specific examples. Matt's saying, yeah, but specific examples limits the range of the and power of your generalization. What? How do I deal with that? Daniel has the answer.
Also, I don't have the answer. I just have another how do I deal with, like, I feel like for, like, this topic, like, almost all the evidence that you have, like, specific evidence could, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but, like, I can think of something else that, like, opposes it.
Interesting.
Just so I'm really confused.
Right.
As to where to go with it.
That's one reason it's a good topic, because it's that complicated. Max?
I mean, one way you could just use an example to strengthen a general argument, just say the general statement, and then just think of the strongest piece of evidence, like, specific argument you have, and then just say, like, comma, among others, or something like
right.
that.
Right, right.
You can use it to support. Like
or you can often say something, you can often say, in games such as WoW, DAOC, or WoW, Lord of the Rings, and other MMOs of that sort, we commonly find this phenomenon, for example, and then go straight into a really particularistic. So you kind of have a generalized, you have a claim that the specific example you're about to use or that you have just used is generalizable, but then you stick to this specific piece of evidence because you can't write about one after another after another.
And that the more you try to write about multiple ones, the vaguer your paper gets. I don't know who was next. Were you
the only problem I find with that is when you're limited to 5 pages, it's hard to put in, like, to choose, like, the strongest, smallest points, you know? Like, I don't know.
It is hard?
I feel like to get your point, like, your whole point across, you have to be a little bit more general.
But you can't. I mean, you are caught between a rock and a hard place. You can't be more general because the readers will say, that's just your opinion, that's vague, that's just... But if you mound up examples, they'll say, well, that doesn't apply to everything, and I can think of counterexamples. So that's why it's an art. That's why it's an art. That's why writing is something that you have to work at and perfect over and over again, because there's no formula that answers this question. You have to negotiate that almost contradiction every single time you write a paper.
And I want to add something into that. Not only do you have to negotiate that, when you're writing a persuasive construct like this, you have to ask yourself the question, who am I trying to persuade?
Great. Great.
If you're trying to persuade a lawyer at Sony,
right,
or are you trying to persuade one of your mates in a gaming community? You may be writing in 2 different ways with 2 different examples.
That's exactly right. I mean, you'd be, to a lawyer, you'd be trying to find precedents, analogies to other realms of law, to your friends. Different kind of argument. Your hand was up, yes.
Yeah, I think it's okay to use specific evidence, but with every piece of specific evidence, you need to have like a whole part analyzing how that pertains to the whole. Like you should add over there like evidence, like, and an under evidence analysis.
Authoritative evidence.
How do you mean, Jonathan? Like, you want me to add another component to this?
Yeah.
Argumentation, evidence, like, and then another section
like
called
like
analysis.
Whenever you bring up evidence, you need to analyze how the evidence pertains to the main idea.
Yes. Yes.
And you can't just like cite statistics or examples and just not explain them.
I think that's really important. You need to unpack why an example makes your case. If that amplifies what Jonathan said.
Shouldn't you also, say that there are other, like, counter-arguments to your example and explain why those...
don't avail?
Right.
Yeah, so you could occasionally do that. I don't think you have to do that in every paper.
Right, yeah.
But if you say something that has a really striking counter example to it, then you should probably do that. But if, you know, some of these things are pretty self-evidently true, and you wouldn't have to give, you might want to give some evidence for them, but you wouldn't want to give counter examples for them. Well, I know counter examples, counter arguments are a common thing that you're taught ought to be in papers. I actually think that they're rarer. Their usefulness is rarer in argumentation than...
Wouldn't that then make it a dissertation?
Yeah, it might be a longer piece, or you have to acknowledge the obvious glaring exceptions to your argument. But short of that, I think I would concentrate on making my case and not making the counter case. Yeah, I mean, obviously you make the counter case to undercut it.
Can I try to say it a different way?
Yeah,
you don't want
please.
To deconstruct the opposite opinion as you're trying to make yours in a smaller space.
Right.
If you had a longer venue, perhaps you could dissect the opposition to your particular position.
That sounds
position.
Good. Yeah. Now, Peter, did you have something you wanted to say here?
I was just talking about how part of my... in the topic on the website, you said take into account these 5 different things: economic and legal and emotional, social, blah, blah. So
some of them. I didn't say all of them.
Okay, but anyways, I took into account all of them. But I started with economic and legal, and I was talking about how players don't usually enter into that sphere. Usually Sony sort of deals with that, and you just play the game. But I did the exceptions where Star Wars Galaxies, you know, completely changed the world because of economic reasons, which did affect the players, and how EverQuest kicked off Mystere for his or her fan fiction, and how, you know, these things that don't normally come into play do change the characters' lives. And so I felt like just citing different things, and then, as Jonathan said, citing different games, and then the next paragraph is just sort of how they all come together to affect gameplay.
Excellent. Let's swap your, give the controls over to, say, Seth. Let's have Seth's paper. We've got time to do...
Mine's identical to his.
What?
Mine's almost identical to his.
Really?
Yeah.
It's pretty much. But it's better?
His computer's
better. And my computer's awesome.
Tim, did you take the same position as he did? Did you take the opposite?
No, me and mine Tim has a little bit of a hole in it right now that I was going to stay after this guy's been storming
again. Okay, now plug it into Seth here. Let's have, and we'll just do this twice.
Can I get a drink?
What?
Can
I get a drink? Yes, yes, you can do that. With, particularly since we're having a equipment not malfunction.
I just have a random question.
Yeah.
Is it legal? Because I know you don't read the terms of service before you buy the video game.
Mm-hmm.
Is that legal? That basically you buy it without knowing the contract? Because you buy the game, assuming you're going to play the game.
Well, what are you really buying, though? Are you buying media in a package?
I don't know. You're buying the hardware. Which is the
so game. That hadn't been tested. I mean, that's exactly the kind of thing that some lawyer could push.
But isn't that like a blind...
Blind contract?
It's like buying the house and then... Or renting something and then...
But they could say that...
I mean...
They expect you to read it. That they put it in front of you.
They can. It's inside.
Well, you buy it before you read the contract.
We
can access their terms of agreement on their website.
But I mean, I don't know if any... But you can still buy it without reading it.
Well,
but you
can
buy
it, but
you can't
slavery, you buy it. And then okay. Some states,
yeah.
Like as the Constitution, we abolished slavery, and then some states didn't do it. I forget which state it was, but they actually discovered they hadn't done like 1980, and they were like, we never did that.
Be
so they had to do it, but someone just dug up what they had done. But I mean, if they had tried to do slavery in the state, and then you take it to the federal courts, they'll be like, sorry, Constitution. So until someone takes the contract to court, nothing, yeah, there's no point to counter it. So I don't think these license agreements are sort of, they're covering themselves.
Yeah.
And so until someone really violates it and they really want
so in
to
the
take
future,
the game to
court, yeah,
then
in the future, this function.
Yeah.
So guys, Daniel has a question that he'd like to put before us here.
Okay,
Daniel.
Guys, let's listen up.
Daniel, then the question to the group again while Seth gets situated.
I kind of want to know what exactly... A company or corporation is claiming that they have rights over, they have ownership over for the game. Like, I'm still confused.
Everything. I think that's pretty much what they said.
Well, I requested that. They stopped them from selling their accounts on eBay.
Well, because
and
they say
Second Life claimed that they owned everything.
The servers,
the
content.
Can you just like
wait? Second Life is
everything.
Free.
Everything.
Can you sell like
the, but you still sign contracts
a note card for
yeah,
like $1,000 that has your new username and password on it though? I mean, like, can you get around that?
Do you own your username and password? No.
What do you rent it?
No, the person providing the service that's part of their identity management system it does not belong to you. Your IDs at Vanderbilt legally don't belong to you.
So if you
yeah, but it's just a note card with writing
them.
On it.
And I own the. I'm the manager responsible for authentication. It's the difference between the infrastructure and where you live within the virtual space. And I think that's where Daniel's trying to get a sense of what's the tangible, true sense of ownership, right?
Right.
I guess they have all the hardware, the servers that run the game.
That's theirs. That
so
is
that's
a tangible
all
property.
So it's on there.
And they have the right to dispose of their property in any way they see fit. So if they want to turn off that switch, do they have the right to turn off the switch on those servers?
Yes. As long as they don't make
what happens to our...
Yeah, as long as they don't, like, keep it for...
Yeah, but they don't make
maybe
friends doing
what
that.
Your terms of service didn't say that.
You can't say that.
Well, then you can't.
You can't, right?
Same difference.
But Taylor is making the argument that they claim ownership in a lot more domains than possibly they have the right to. And I just wanted to, before we go to... to Seth's computer. I want to show you what contract of adhesion is.
Battlefield, in which corporate authors bigger than mine, you see their work.
Finally, I've learned from my co-professor.
feel the power.
A contract of adhesion is a contract. Listen up. Listen up. Is a contract between two parties that does not allow for negotiation, i.e., take it or leave it. It is often a contract that is entered into between unequal bargaining partners, such as when an individual is given a contract by the salesperson of a multinational corporation. The consumer is in no position to negotiate the standard terms of such contracts, and the company's representative often does not have the authority to do so. So every time you purchase one, not only are you signing a contract of adhesion, you're purchasing it, as Matt has pointed out, prior to even being handed the contract of adhesion. Okay.
That's what I thought it was. Sounds like a mafia deal, doesn't it?
Sounds like Seth's turn.
Go to Austria.
Sounds like Seth's turn. Read to us.
This is the video game makers owe a debt to its player base. Without them, there would be no game, and so online gamers should be given artistic and ownership rights regarding the avatars and accounts.
Okay, let's stop and work on that sentence. That's your thesis sentence. Any suggestions for that?
Their player base.
Can you hear it one more time?
Yeah, read it again.
Well, when you say them, it could. It's a little bit vague.
Let him read it again.
The video game makers owe a debt to its player base. Without them, there would be no game, so online gamers should be given artistic and ownership rights regarding the avatars and accounts.
To their player base.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I can't get beyond that.
Their player base.
And
without.
So you got a number. So that's called a number agreement issue, so that when you see your professor say number problem, as I said on several people's paper. That's what I'm talking about.
My husband.
I'm not sure if that's right. Should that copy be
assigned? Wait up.
What?
As after the comma. Should that comma be a
set? Yeah, no, the comma is
too independent.
Yeah, so Max is a dentist.
It's pretty late at night.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
What is that called where that is a comma splice? That is regarded as possibly the biggest grammatical error a human being can make in English. Some professors will give you a C on a paper for one comma splice.
That's why I was really careful about it.
That's why I don't believe in commas.
My friend's a common Nazi. She kept putting commas on the Nazi.
Okay, guys, we're working on this here together. Not chatting about it.
Shouldn't them become it? Without them, without it?
Yeah, well, them. I think them is a little confusing. Without it could be makers or player base.
Without the players.
Without the players.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's helpful revising. Do you need a comma before that and?
Revise that a little bit.
Instead of and, so can you put
online gamers? Okay, never
mind. Could be without the players.
Why would you need a comma there?
I don't know.
You have no idea.
I'm really bad at grammar.
Shouldn't so be a conjunction on its own?
It's independent.
Separate two independent.
What if you took away comma and so and put like a dash?
Wouldn't and so be kind of
redundant? You could get rid of the so there, but...
I mean, get rid of the and.
What?
Or get, so's a...
Yeah. There would
and,
be no way...
And it's so functions the same.
Yeah.
Online gamers should be given artistic... Isn't the thesis online gamers should be given artistic... And, that's what he's trying to argue.
Right.
The first sentence is great, but I don't think it's the thesis.
I'll put a
period after experience and then say online gamers.
Yeah.
Okay, now listen to what they're saying. Get rid of that semicolon. Go, the video game makers owe a debt to their player base, comma, and without the players, there would be no experience, period.
Delete the and.
Yes, and then...
So.
Right, period. And then hammer your thesis sentence. You know, that's the dramatic point at the end of a paragraph. Listen to this, folks. At the end of a paragraph, the last sentence is the strongest sentence in a paragraph. You're always taught that the first sentence should be your topic sentence, your thesis sentence, whatever, your transition sentence. But nobody ever makes the point, which is crucial, which is that a paragraph is structured like a
book.
I paused because without the last word of that sentence, you had no idea what I was going to say. A paragraph, a sentence is structured like a plot or like a drama. A paragraph is structured like a drama. The last line and the last words are the punchline. And so it's very effective to have your thesis statement be the last sentence, the punchline sentence of your paragraph. So good revising, guys. Online gamers should be given artistic and ownership rights regarding their avatars and accounts. Now go to your evidence, please.
After this...
But you put your evidence really, before your thesis?
I know, this is not actually even evidence. I was thinking my best evidence was actually my intro about my experiences with WoW and how the experience is what made it enjoyable.
Okay,
well,
get to your evidence.
You can just make your thesis paper, so...
Get to your evidence.
Maybe just like the way you worded it better.
Is this evidence or?
Nah, I don't think it is evidence.
Well, go to your real evidence. Can you find it for us?
It is the entire intro is really playing WoW and how.
So you began with a narrative intro.
Yeah, there's it. And then, first, say the social aspect of the game, which is
where are you? Highlight before you start.
It's kind of like the last social aspect of the game, which was not pre-designed or created by the game maker, is the reason why.
That's evidence?
Well, it's evidence.
Read us your evidence.
I will. Okay, let me find it.
I want the evidence.
The legal time to quote.
Yeah, well,
foster emerging culture within the game.
Well, while we got this kind of quiet time, think about your evidence for a second. How would you, Jay, Professor Clayton, think about evidence? What would be constituted good evidence? Is citation of another person's opinion evidence?
Well, that's a great question for the class to answer rather than for me to answer.
But don't get constrained by just that example I used. Is it a fact that is this thing beige? What would you offer in evidence to determine the color of that? I mean, what constitutes a definition of evidence? Don't go to Wikipedia. Let's hear what you guys think.
First, just answer that simple question: is the citation of an authority evidence?
Yes.
I would say so.
How many think that's evidence?
What else could be?
Okay. How many do not think that's evidence? Both professors.
I didn't know they were voting.
Yeah. High school teachers maybe have taught you that. Though,
sorry, we went to high school.
I think it can be, which is
some of us did here.
I don't know who teaches that. It can't be. I don't think citation of an authority can be evidence.
More valid than ours.
Exactly. Right. It can be rhetorically effective support, which is different from evidence. So I'm not saying. Cite authority.
It can be used in the context of your persuasion goal.
That's right. Now that you all are grinning at me as if I'm doing something sneaky, these are analytic distinctions that you need to know about to be an effective writer.
Tim, jump in.
Can you tell me what evidence is then, please?
Yeah, what is evidence?
Seth is going to show us evidence.
She's going to give us an example.
Yeah, but Max has his hand up first.
Well, I was just going to say, aren't there four main types of evidence? We went about rhetoric for a while.
Let's hear them.
Hooray or whatever. Cause and effect is one.
Okay.
I'm blanking on the other.
Keep going down that route.
I'm trying to think. No, that's the
secondhand.
Example maybe is one.
Definitely example.
And, I don't know. This was a wild
comparison.
Analogy was one.
Analogy?
I like that word.
Okay.
So close.
Example?
Smart word freaks me out. Alliteration.
Okay, Seth. Maybe Seth will be an example of the fourth type. Let's go.
Cause and effect, what does that mean in terms of evidence?
You smack someone in the face and it hurts. cause.
That's effect. Evidence?
Yeah.
Isn't that an example?
It's evidence that smacked and hurt.
Yeah, that's an example.
Is that...
I mean, he gave an example of how cause and effect can be evidence.
Yes. That's what I just did.
Okay.
So we got 2-for-1 on that one.
Exactly.
That's good.
Seth, read us.
Well, this part has to do with, which isn't actually...
Listen to Seth.
I should probably incorporate this into the thesis, but talk about how physical additions to the game, such as add-ons or macros, are property of the creators, not the... they were given the tools by the companies, but the creators actually have own this, and so it's just one evidence that the games aren't entirely the property of the companies. Such examples as EQ windows and EQ macros were where player made this is late tonight. Where player made additions to the game were initially deemed bannable offenses by SOE, but were then incorporated into the game itself once it was realized these additions were entirely helpful and there was no need to threaten permanent bans for the unfair use of such add ons. Huh?
Where was Rightland?
Is it
such examples.
Oh.
You just turned it into a sentence fragment.
Oh,
yeah. Putting where are
they? Oh. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So such examples as EQ windows and EQ macros were player-made additions to the game that were initially deemed bannable offenses by SOE, but were then incorporated into the game itself once it was realized that these additions are entirely helpful and there was no need to threaten permanent bans for the unfair use of such add-ons. Yes, Tim?
I think that was an example.
You do think that's an example?
Such examples.
Because what was the telltale hint?
Such examples.
Such as might be a trigger.
Yeah.
But that's also... That's also cause and effect. There was a
example can be anything. It can be any one of those four. Or the other three.
An analogy is a form of reasoning that can work as evidence. It's not necessarily an example. Yes.
Just as the United States of America is nothing without its citizenry, the MMOs are nothing without their player base.
Who wrote that amazing analogy?
I just thought of it. Well, actually, I thought of it last night. I think it's a new song.
Benjamin Franklin, I think, wrote that.
Okay.
Okay. Now you just got me terrified to death of my paper.
Are you talking about the United States?
Well, good.
As you should be.
Yes, you should be.
Great.
I need to rewrite a lot.
I'm going to rewrite my paper.
I'm just
going to
hit Control A and the delete.
Okay.
I can agree with the fact that a government.
I think we're going
to. Unless given to a vice citizen.
All right,
okay,
guys, listen
up. You've got until
Monday.
I do want radical rewritings. I did hope that this kind of discussion would have some effect on helping you to see ways to rework your paper. Feel free to take your draft to the writing studio.
To delete it.
Pardon me?
I said to delete it.
Feel free to delete your draft, write a new draft, and take it to the writing studio. Got a lot of time. I hope we've set some goals for you.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
Anecdotal, testimonial, statistical, and analogical.
Anecdotal.
Anecdotal.
This is great. Let's have these out. Anecdotal. That is, tell a little story. I love that kind of evidence, and it's usually a form of example.
Wait. So anecdotal is a type of evidence.
Form of example.
It's a form of example.
Oh. But it's not a type
of
evidence.
It's kind of analysis as well.
It is a type of example. So that you say, instead of saying, for example, we find orcs in Lord of the Rings, you say, for example, I was running across the North Downs when I suddenly encountered this orc. And so it's an anecdote that brings in the evidence you need. You see what I'm saying, Chris? It's not the anecdotal evidence. You know, you're used to the phrase anecdotal evidence be used in the context of social sciences where it's invalid. That is, you know, social scientists
that's
say,
purely
well, if
anecdotal.
It's... Yeah, it's purely anecdotal. But this is a different sense of anecdotal evidence. Anecdotal, testimonial. That is, if you have firsthand experience that you can bring to bear on something that can count as evidence. What were the other two?
Statistical.
Statistical. It's hard to find in literature papers, but you could say, you know, you could have moments where you say things like, the great preponderance of these games are first-person shooters rather than, and then quote a statistic that says, you know, 78% are first-person shooters. That would be evidence for some kind of argument. So you could find a way to use statistics as evidence. And what was the fourth?
Analogical.
Tim?
Couldn't anecdotal and testimonial in theory be like the same?
Absolutely.
Because I was going to say your whole thing about the orc, couldn't you also say I was running through?
Right.
And, okay.
That's right. And Peter's second paper went so far as to... what were your two characters? You had two characters in your paper.
Hero protagonist and Peter Chisnell.
Yeah, he had hero protagonist. So he said, you know, hero protagonist was doing this in the metaverse, and Peter Chiswell was doing that in
his dorm
room. And so he personified himself in order to tell an anecdote. It's very effective. Let's stop this discussion now. Let me say that for next class period, we begin Spencer's The Fairy Queen. We have a PDF file.
Yes!
So, we're going to
PDF
put it.
Oh, yeah,
I want to tell you where we're going to put
it. Let's make it like up and down. I was holding my laptop like this.
Well, you have to rotate.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Side. Go to view.
You can also print it. Let's get back to Professor Clayton.
Sorry.
Where are we going to put it? We're going to put it in the digital Dropbox. This time.
Whoa.
That's tricky.
Not the digital Dropbox.
I checked that
one. Oh, no.
You know, I checked it.
Right. Course content.
And it even announces it, right? Well, it announces, you have it as an announcement. This has been added to here. Then you just click the link.
I kept looking for the thing in Oak.
Okay.
I didn't even know where that supplemental material was.
We're going to have it in...
I'm so confused.
How about this? Shall we say assignment? I'm looking at the interface of Oak. It's going to be in Oak.
Let's just leave it at that.
If you can't find it in Oak,
we have a different set of conversations that we'll chat about.
Isn't there a link to Facebook too?
Let me tell you what this piece is. This is a poem by Edmund Spencer. It is fairly complicated reading. It's the edition I have PDF'd for you is an abridgment of Book 3. So Spencer's poem, as I'll tell you more about next class period, is 6 books long. Each book is self-contained. So we're going to begin with Book 3, much as George Lucas began with
Episode
4 of Star Wars. He is, in fact, was modeling himself on Spencer. Spencer wrote Book 2 and 3 first and then expanded it out. So Book 3 is self-contained, and this abridgment of Book 3 is about half as long as the actual Book 3 is. And it's got superb explanatory notes. Vocabulary notes out on the side as well as explanatory notes at the bottom of the page. So I highly recommend you use this copy of it as opposed to, you know, grabbing one off of your shelf at home. And you're laughing.
I'm just tickled.
Okay, exactly. It's divided into cantos. I would like you for Thursday to have read the first 2 cantos of Book 3. Write that down or remember it. But everyone needs...
syllabus.
Okay, I'll put it on the syllabus after you leave, but the first 2 cantos...
Wouldn't want you to put any effort forward, Chris.
Right. I was going to open up a Word document and type words.
Okay. Any questions about Spencer? I recommend that you read the first 2 cantos of Book 3 twice before Thursday. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your time and attention.
Good class.
Oh,
well, it's been my camera.
It's really bad.
I still don't feel like we've clarified
the experience.
Really bad.
That's the smart people.
Conversations.
Solid strategy.
Yeah. I think it is. I'm persuaded by Taylor's argument.
It's a good, like, logic.
It is not part of the game. It is part of the game.
Recording. Sound slash input settings. Okay, see that push to talk? You've got it on voice activation.
You're just defining narrative very specifically. And that's fair. That's fair.
Because I would define voice narrative naturally by the broadest possible
thing. It's something that includes culture, literature, who's rejected,
Push to talk is what Jeff's saying. Is it? You said it. See, what I do is I've got my game noise here on this speaker, and I've got my team speak just on my headphones. So I've actually separated the voices.
I was wondering if we were talking about the Second Life.
I don't either. I turn off all music.
I turn it all off and put on my iPod.
Our services are what I do too, unless I'm talking to everybody.
In Second Life, completely virtual. And do those contribute to gross domestic product of the country since they're